And we're live. Welcome everybody here to the Lakers. Well, this is The Hook, a part of the Lakers Lounge podcast channel, YouTube page thing. I'm Anthony Irwin, joined on this fine Friday afternoon, as I always am for these episodes of The Hook, by Pete Zayas of the Laker Film Room Pod. Pete, how you holding up?
Doing pretty well. Yeah, things are calming down a little bit with the season ending. So enjoying a bit of a slower pace and a great conference finals. How you doing, man?
Conference finals has been excellent. Like both sides of the conference have been really, really fun, like for very different reasons. And it's basically two different sports, but it's so much fun to watch this. I wish the Lakers weren't on this side of the sport as they have been since basically the 90s. And so what we're going to talk about today is how the Lakers can catch up to that version of the sport that is being played. And I think that the way that the Lakers go about doing that is to do what they do best and go star hunting, go out, get Giannis if you can, and build around him and Luka and Austin and maybe LeBron, and see what that version of the Lakers would look like. Pete, you and I have been talking about this off of the air, right, via text, and I think we both kind of hold this belief, so we'll see where this conversation takes us. A quick reminder before we do that, the show is first brought to you in part by Prize Picks. Use that promo code HMA and get $50 worth of lineups when you sign up and play a $5 lineup of your own. Please hit that like button. Please hit that subscribe button. Please turn on notifications both for the show and for YouTube. And then if you guys are listening to the show in the morning, please hit subscribe wherever it is that you get your podcast, preferably an Odyssey, but I do not care. All right. So we dive on in with this Giannis thing, and I want to preface this by saying I am almost always depth guy, organizational depth, roster depth, go at teams in waves, you know, but I don't know, man. I watch these conference finals, and I watch the level of basketball that is being played, and I also acknowledge that this is a gamble. Going all in for Giannis could set you way, way back if it doesn't work out. But I also think, though, that like when you have a Luka and when you're operating at a time, you know, at the onset of what appears to be Wemby's like reign, basically, like whether you go all in, either you go all in or you basically just kind of trickle money out until the end, but it all kinds of comes out to the end. And I am of the opinion that the Lakers need to lean on their strengths here, that what they are really good at is convincing stars to come to LA and to play together and to try to work that out. And that is my sales pitch to the audience. Why would you say this makes the most sense for the Lakers?
Yeah, a couple of reasons. I believe that the Lakers need a front court player who's better than Austin in order for this build to be a championship caliber team. I think they need at least like an all NBA caliber player, first, second, or third team in the front court to really compete with. If you look at the front courts of all of the teams remaining, every single one of them are paying bigs like Evan Mobley's in the 50s, Cat's in the 50s, Jared Allen even is around 30 or something like that, right? And
right.
Chet is about to get his $40 million extension per year, and Wemby, of course, right, is an MVP candidate. So I don't think the Lakers can enter that without having just somebody in the front court, right? And
yeah,
so when I look around, though, in terms of who's available, if not Giannis, then who else would it be? So I, like, of course, every pathway that the Lakers could take is fraught with danger. There's danger in going the depth route, too, right? Like, there's no version of this summer that's like, and Lakers are locked to win it all, of course. But I do think that they need to, so much of OKC and San Antonio especially, think about how many guards are in this series, Anthony. You've got Shea, Wallace, Dort, Castle, Fox hasn't played yet, but he'll play soon. Vassell, Caruso. You've got a bunch of guards in this that I think the weakness of that is if you've got an athletic front court player that can really put pressure on the rim. They got nothing for that. And we saw that in game one with Wemby, right? Where it was like, this is a guy that like trying to switch guards onto him. And they had to make an adjustment in game two and put Hartenstein on him a little bit more and all of that. But just somebody, I think we need a
front court. Rugby.
Right, right. I just think we need a front court player that other teams have to worry about. And a lot of the versions of the summer that I hear alternatives to Giannis are like a good center and a good power forward, right? But guys that are role players, not fundamentally not somebody that you're giving the ball to in crunch time. I think that bumps up Austin and his level of importance and what he has to be able to do on the ball without having that front court type of player. And so like I used this analogy earlier, like let's say we got Watson and Hartenstein for the 4 and 5. That'd be
a nice offseason.
That's a nice offseason. Good offseason. For sure.
Yeah.
I don't know if a guy like Watson signs if LeBron comes back, right? Like, does he come somewhere to not be the starter? Probably not, I don't think. But that would be a good offseason.
And does LeBron take less for Peyton Watson?
Exactly. Exactly. So if you end up replacing LeBron and DA with Watson and Hartenstein, which would be two good acquisitions, are you a contender? No, I'd even argue that you're like, you might have moved laterally, but
hopefully,
hopefully, right? And so, and even if you do bring LeBron back, let's say it's for a year, and he signs on a minimum type of deal, I do think you could compete if he decided to do that and those type of guys wanted to join. But how do you replace him after that, right? Like, I think this is the summer to do it, but it's not like you go down to the dominant front court player store and get to pick out whatever you want. So I understand, and I'm curious your thoughts on like why you think there's so much reticence toward Giannis. I think they're
that's a great question.
I think we're a bit scarred from Russ, and but I, whether it's Giannis or somebody else that I cannot think of, I just like I think that they need a guy in the front court, and he's the one guy that's available.
I think they just need a, whether it's front court guy. I mean, it's hard to do it as a backcourt guy, right? Because then Austin literally isn't starting. But I just think they need a guy who would push Austin down to the third spot on the roster. And again, I really want to come back to that topic of like why Lakers fans are nervous about Giannis in particular. Yeah. I think there's a lot going on there, a lot of meat on that bone. But actually, I was thinking about this, Pete. And I actually think that there is a cross-sport comparison to the Lakers going in for Giannis here.
Okay.
And it actually is what Mark Walter did when he bought the Dodgers. I don't know if you're aware of this, but when Mark Walter bought the Dodgers, he bought them in May of 2012. And then in August of 2012, the Dodgers traded for Adrian Gonzalez, Josh Peckett, Nick Punto, and Carl Crawford. And the kind of reason for doing it was like, this is like the big splash that we're going to make that you're going to like feel immediately, like you're going to enjoy immediately from a like watching this team play every day standpoint. But while we do that, we're also going to build out the back end of the organization. And the two like aspects of this thing are going to get built up at basically the same time. And by the time this trade is fully, you know, sussed out or whatever over the years, by the time those guys all retire or depart or whatever, the rest of the organization can kind of be built up. But this was this like shot in the arm to kind of get us through that amount of time. And now the way that it worked out, Josh Beckett's arm fell off, unfortunately, but he did have a fun, like little playoff run. He was an incredible playoff pitcher, over the course of his career. Carl Crawford was one of the more frustrating Dodgers of my lifetime of being a fan, but Adrian Gonzalez winds up being a key figure in LA sports, just like from a like cultural Los Angeles standpoint, one of my favorite Dodgers of all time. And it did exactly basically what they wanted to do. Like it made the Lakers or the Dodgers kind of this playoff adjacent or playoff team. And they continued to build around this and they kept on throwing money and throwing money and throwing money, which you can't quite do in the same way in the NBA, I grant. But, but like, I kind of see trading for Giannis as kind of Mark Walter's immediate kind of, all right, we're going to do this right now, but while we do this and while we navigate the Luka Giannis era, we're also going to be building the rungs of the organization that we know need to caught back up to. What do you think of that comparison?
Yeah, I definitely, you know, new ownership group is going to want to make that type of shot in the arm. And I love the point about building up the kind of the guts of the Lakers organization while that's happening. One thing to this point that if I wanted to be a Lakers are actually more in on Giannis conspiracy theorist than people realize, the hiring of Tony Bennett was interesting to me. He's the new guy that's in charge of the Lakers draft, right?
Draft consultant. Yeah.
Tony Bennett was a very good college coach at Virginia, but what he was known for was not recruiting top guys. He was actually known for finding undervalued talent, high school talent that you could turn into like top level
gritty athletes,
gritty, like, nasty type of guys. So if you were looking to have a draft or where it's say more second round talent and where you found yourself in a roster position where, hey, we're going to need a couple of guys at the back end of this roster to maybe pop off and have a Caruso Goodwin type of arc type of thing, that a guy like Tony Bennett would be help you get that rather than a, you don't like, you're not looking to draft top 10.
He wasn't like Cal, right? He wasn't like a Kentucky, like he didn't get like the superstars that you know, that Cal was responsible for. Yeah. And yet he competed really well with Cal. Like
he won a couple of championships. Yeah.
Like he was pretty freaking good. Yeah.
So yeah, that's my conspiracy theory that Tony Bennett was brought in to help find some, you know, undrafted type of guys and things like that. I don't know. We'll see. We'll see.
No, I'm sure I think even like building on that point, one of the things, or maybe the thing, honestly, that makes the Dodgers the superpower that they are is it's really rare. Like I would really have to think long and hard about it to find an acquisition that the Dodgers didn't get the most out of, right? Like, you know, all right. So the best example, right? Like the biggest acquisition that the Dodgers have made since Mark Walter got there is Shohei Ohtani. And he has won a couple of MVPs and stuff like that. And that was before he really started pitching. And now he is pitching and batting. And not only is he now his hitting isn't where it needs to be this season, but his ERA, I think, is like 0.85 or 0.86.
Insane.
Which is fucking ridiculous, right? Like, and you, like you can go through like any number of acquisitions. Like he's the reason that I bring him up is because like his pitching was always solid when he was with the Angels. He was always a good pitcher, had great stuff, but like he needed to take another couple of steps forward to be really like a Cy Young level type pitcher. And there was always this question like, well, he'll always be like a pretty good pitcher to even like a really good pitcher. And he's going to be an incredible batter, right? And that's kind of how his value was going to play out. But now he's like an incredible pitcher. And the idea is that eventually he's going to get back to at some point becoming an incredible batter. And now you have this elite presence at the top of your roster on both sides of the ball. And that is something that like the Dodgers have really been working with him on and maximizing that talent. And you can kind of go through, Yamamoto has gotten better since he got to the Dodgers. Roki Sasaki was somebody who like was kind of middling, and then they turned him into a closer for the playoff run last year. And then now they're trying to bring him back and make him this better starting pitcher. You could go through like role players that they built out. Max Muncy is the guy at third base right now. Justin Turner before him. You had and like for the Dodgers, what they've basically done is like, all right, everybody who comes into this organization, you're going to get better. Like you're just, that's just the expectation. And we expect that of ourselves as much as we expect it out of you. And like for the Lakers, if you go out and you basically say, all right, what the Lakers are excellent at right now, like the bones of this house is go out, get superstar, right? They got LeBron, they got Anthony Davis, they got Luka Doncic. Now let's continue to lean on that strength here. And then by way of investment in, you know, like the Dodgers invested into the various levels of their organization, now you're going to maximize your, this Lakers team's version of Max Muncy, of Kike Hernandez, of, like right now, the guy, Andy Páez, their center fielder right now, is just completely broken out. And that's how like the Lakers become like the basketball equivalent of what the Dodgers are. But I think it has to start by that trade here of bringing in a Giannis so that you can give yourself the time and the leeway to also work on that other stuff while everybody is kind of focused on what that team would look like.
What do you say to the point that the Lakers already have their guy to build around and that they've already got that cornerstone, you know, superstar type of talent, and that you actually need to fill in the team around him with supporting players rather than yet another player that's sort of a similar ilk?
I would say that in this era, one superstar isn't nearly enough. Like you look at San Antonio, that they aren't superstars quite yet, but they're eventually going to be superstars. Stephon Castle's going to be a superstar. Dylan Harper doing this as a rookie typically means that dude's going to get ridiculously good over the course of his career. And then fucking Wemby. And then, you know, you look at OKC, right? Chet is still relatively young. Shea is like in his prime. Those guys are superstars and all-stars. And I really like Austin. I don't think he's ever going to be considered like a superstar. So I think they need another superstar. And I think but I also think though, critically, you need a superstar who compounds the talents of the guy that you already have. And this is where, like, we segue to why Lakers fans are a little nervous about Giannis, is because there is this question as to whether or not Giannis will actually play basketball in the way that he needs to make himself better and to make Luka better. Right.
What do you think that means?
It means pick and roll, means setting screens. We just saw in Milwaukee that team run up against a glass ceiling because they didn't run pick and roll nearly enough with Dame and with Giannis. And he wanted to become this point forward and all this stuff. And they put a ceiling on themselves with him being the point forward. And I think if he is going to work with Luka, he needs to be a pick in either roll or short roll type of presence who gets downhill and destroys teams' worlds. And that's where, like, I think Lakers fans, I actually just did a radio hit right before this, and the host there was like, I don't know about another superstar. What about the egos and all this stuff? And I think that is a very fair concern here with Giannis. And I think that's where Rob really has to put on his salesman hat, really needs to become an agent for the Lakers here and pitch this world where, hey, you can go be the guy in Miami. You can go be the guy in Boston. You can go be the guy wherever it is that you wind up. And your team is going to be pretty good. But if you come here and you set screens and you play the way that we need you to play, and this is what the Dodgers do, by the way. Mookie Betts is currently playing shortstop. He was a right fielder his whole career. Yeah. So like Rob basically says to Giannis, hey, if you come here and you commit to these things, not only are we good, we're going to be great. So do you want to be involved in greatness, right? And I think that's the pitch that has to be made there. Now, will that be committed to when the chips are down at all times?
Yeah,
I don't know. But like, God, I'm sorry, I'm filibustering here. But like, that was a concern we had with this team, right? Is everybody going to be committed to all the little things that they need to do with their contract status where it was last season, right? Rui, Smart, Ayton, Austin, LeBron, they all, like, to JJ's credit, I think this is probably the thing that he was probably best at this year, was managing those situations and managing, hey, if we're going to be where we need to be, you need to commit to this, 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 and this. And I think if he can do that with Giannis, and if Luka can help him do that with Giannis and LeBron can help him do that with Giannis, I think that's the best version of this Lakers team here moving forward. But we've texted about this. That's the biggest question mark here.
For me, it's not the pick and roll element of Giannis is fairly unimportant to me, frankly. Mm. And it's not at all really a part of my interest in pairing him with Luka. It's the same role that Giannis has always played. Like the idea that he's going to be a role guy for Lillard. Like, first off, Luka is a whole different animal than 34-year-old Damian Lillard,
absolutely.
Or whatever.
Yeah.
He was at that time. Secondly, like, Giannis is a point forward. They didn't, like, just experiment with that year. That's who been and who he's always been. And my thought is that you have two guys that you generally give the ball to in any given lineup. If you've got three guys that are really good at it, it means that you can do that for 48 minutes. And then you've got part of the game where all three are on the floor. And that's very, provided that you can play enough defense that you can add that. But for most of the game, my idea with Luka and Giannis is that you've got arguably the most dominant off the dribble from the perimeter attack with your jump shot type of threat, right? Both that and get to the rack with size, but then the most dominant around the rim threat in the whole game, just in terms of the power and force that you can put there. My biggest concern from a fit standpoint between the two is actually what you do at the five spot. You know, Luka wants that roll guy lob threat, and Giannis needs maybe a spacing five. I do think that if you go that route, your five is actually more similar to a JaVale McGee type of role, where what you do is you close with Luka and Giannis at the five, basically. Luka, Giannis, Austin, and two guys that can defend and knock down threes. And you've got yourself a pretty good team right there. Let's say Marcus is one of them. I think you're missing one more spot right there. Yeah, we were talking about that last night, right? Imagine Bron on a minimum on that team. But with Giannis, I actually view him more as an on-ball type of player. And that's one thing. The Lakers' ball handling is so consolidated into three players. Think about how we played last year. It was like if LeBron, Luka, or Austin didn't have the ball, very few of the other guys could do anything. That's a huge difference between us and other teams. And so there is that route to just like get two or three guys, of which a guy like Peyton Watson is one of them, that has some he can attack off the dribble or grab and go in transition, and you've got a little guy in open space, he can attack that. You never see Rui do that. That's not something DA or Jackson can do. So that is a way to go. But my thought with Giannis, I do think that down the stretch of games and when you want to play two-man game, there's an aspect of that. But the role man aspect of him is actually not how I view him at all. I view him as an on-ball player, as the guy who he's always been.
Yeah, I think I would say you need, in order to get him to buy into being a Laker, that needs to be a carrot, right? Is you can't just say, hey, for 48 minutes, you're going to set 53 screens and become Clint Capella, right? Even DeAndre Ayton wasn't interested in that. But I think all of the Lakers' best sets, if you look at it at the end of the year, and the thing that created the most open shots would be two-man game, whether with Luka and Giannis or Austin and Giannis. Mm-hmm. And that's something that he has been somewhat reticent to do over as his career has gone on. And I think if there's any hesitancy on his part on willingness to do that, I would say that, yeah, the depth path and all that stuff makes the most sense. But I also think too, I think you made this point either on your show. Yeah, I think it was on your show with Darius, talking about this offseason, and you were talking about how if you focus too heavily on depth against teams that have been able to build their depth through tanking, and their depth is lottery picks that are all coming into their own at the same time, you're not going to out depth OKC. You're not going to out depth San Antonio. And I think the Lakers, especially if we go back to that comparison here with the Dodgers have manufactured depth with guys like Muncy, with guys all throughout their organization. But don't get it twisted. The reason that the Dodgers are the Dodgers is because of Shohei and Mookie and Freeman and all these guys. And I think that's where Lakers fans, and I think just kind of internet GMs in general, kind of overthink some stuff. Is at the end of the day, basketball is won by superstars. That's who wins the shit. And to me, when I watch OKC and I watch San Antonio, I don't watch that and say, man, if the Lakers could just get better with the back third of their rotation. No, they need to get better at the top of the rotation. And then by pushing guys down the rotation, improve their depth. And I think that's something that Giannis or whatever the player that the Lakers, here's what I'll say. If it isn't Giannis now, I think they would be wise to spend or to eventually land at superstar who pushes Austin down and pushes the rest of the depth down. The reason that I'm kind of zoned in or zeroed in on Giannis right now is just because of the situation that he's currently in, where like New York, I don't think is interested. Like I've been kind of asking around, and I think New York is really kind of focused on their core. Miami, I guess they're interested, but like, I don't know. Like, I don't think Milwaukee is desperate to get Khalil Ware or Bam Adebayo. And then, like, you know, Minnesota, I think, is the one team here that I think is desperate enough and has the pieces to make that a more viable trade. But if you're Milwaukee, do you want Julius Randle's contract? Do you want Rudy Gobert's contract? Like, I think here for the Lakers, if you can, like, the Lakers could theoretically here, Pete, and this is something that I full credit to you because you were in on this before anybody else. The Lakers could turn zero players or like maybe like Adu Thiro and I don't know. I think it would be like, would it be Vando? I think they need to send out another contract to make the math work, but very few members or basically no members of their rotation. They could turn just space into Giannis. That is a really unique spot that you don't see in the NBA anymore. And that is essentially what the Dodgers did back in the day with that Carl Crawford, Adrian Gonzalez, Josh Beckett trade. It was like, look, we have money. Boston needs to shed a bunch of their own. Just come on over here. We'll add you to this. We'll see what this turns out. And then, you know, build. That's essentially like what the Lakers have the ability to do here. And I don't think you're going to, I'll say that I don't think you're ever going to get this type of opportunity ever again.
Yeah.
It would require too much, too many machinations all lining up at the same time.
No doubt about that. And like superstars and front court superstars will come available every couple of years for sure. And the Lakers want to be in on that, but I'm very much of the mindset now, Anthony, of now we have Luka Doncic at 27 now. Years old. Like we need to win. Like, I was talking to Darius earlier. He was talking about 5 to 7 year windows. And I'm thinking, I'm like, 3 years. We have a 3 year window, really. That's what the NBA, I don't think that those really long windows even exist anymore in the NBA in terms of building a team.
Not in the CBA. God,
right. No. Right. And so that's not to say that Giannis is the only way that you can get to the importance of being the best team that you can now. But I think that's very important for the team to not just kind of kick the can down the road and get incrementally a little bit better, because that's when like your window passes with Luka. He's going to be 30, 31 in the blink of an eye and hopefully still with the Lakers and still dominant. But these are the years, man, when you've got a guy like Luka to really capitalize on that. And so if you believe that you need a front court star caliber player, like I believe they do, like there's no time like the present. You've got a guy that's like one of the most dominant in the game. There's really only a couple of guys even he's shoulder to shoulder with like Wemby and Jokic. But this is Giannis. He's one of the real dragons of the game. So it's like, if not him, then I'd love to hear the ideas for somebody else. The depth argument does not inspire me. Like all of the different versions of the roster that I've seen. Now, who knows? Like we'll see what the team actually comes up with if they do go that route, and if LeBron's back, especially if you can add some legit talent to last year's team while keeping what you already had. Okay, yeah, we start to get, if there's enough of it. I think it's hard to do financially, but they can swing that. Cool. But yeah, man, I do think they need that type of guy, and there's one available.
The LeBron part of this is where I think it just completely puts it over the hill for me. Okay. And this is something that like you really need to swing for the fences on. Look, remember a couple of years back when they were talking about his most recent pay cut, you know, and what he was willing to take a pay cut for, and the players that he was willing to do that for was like Klay Thompson, James Harden, I think DeMar DeRozan, and then hilariously Jonas Valanciunas. But like, I think this is one of those spots here where like I've watched the episode that he did with Nash where they talked about his free agency and the decision that he has, you know, coming up here this summer. One, I don't think you record that episode without looking at the Lakers, the entirety of that recording, right? Like, you know what the response is going to be here if you're LeBron and you record that episode. And it was like the response so far that I've been able to glean is like, all right, we know what that was. But like, if you're LeBron, and if I'm just going to take LeBron at his word, he said to Nash that the 1A, 1B of his priorities is winning and being in a spot that his family is comfortable. So if that's what you're going to tell me in that episode, right? And if that's what you're going to clip, remember his like podcast company sent that out as a clip. So if that's what you're going to tell me that you are the most focused on, and the Lakers could land Giannis Antetokounmpo and then potentially starters beyond that using their exceptions, and that features you accepting a minimum, like that is what he's been like. He was willing to take a pay cut so long as that pay cut went somewhere, that, you know, when he floated that idea out there, when his representation floated that idea out there. And here again, like, all right, we got Luka, you got Giannis, you got, I think Austin would take a little bit less in this scenario as well. His representation has been kind of saying that, and even he is on the record, Austin is saying, it doesn't have to be every single penny of my max, mm-hmm. you know, in order to make that, I really want to be in Los Angeles. I really want to win. And so like, if you like right now, the conversation with LeBron is going to be basically, look, first they're going to renounce his rights sometime soon. And they're going to, and then when they do so, they're going to have a conversation with him and they're going to say, look, this is what Golden State can pay you. This is what Cleveland can pay you. This is what New York can pay you. And this is what their teams would look like if you went to them on a mid level. And this is what their team would look like if you went to them on a minimum. And then, and like, same thing here with the Lakers. This is what our roster would look like with you at $25 million. This is what our roster would look like with you at $14.7 million. And this is what our roster would look like with you at the minimum. And the way that you have that conversation in the most meaningful way is to be like, one of these iterations features Giannis Antetokounmpo. Like, and like, if I'm LeBron and my options are as whittled down to the extent that they are, that's the situation I look for. They did their work. The Lakers did their work. Like what the Lakers have always had to do is basically have the best offseason they can and then tell LeBron, are you interested? Mm-hmm. And this would be that, like, this, I think, like, trading for Giannis would get LeBron the most interested in that hypothetical. What do you think?
I think it's possible. I don't think LeBron ever wants to be the Vince Carter coming off of the bench and spotting up as the not super important player on the team, right? That I do mm-hmm. wonder if they sign Giannis, if there's a certain amount of too many cooks in the kitchen type of deal. The yeah. ceiling of that group is monstrous. There's also the like running back on defense. Like there would be some obnoxious regular season games with Giannis, Luka, and LeBron all on the same team. By the way, on that front, my biggest hesitation regarding Giannis is actually personality wise. If you actually followed his day-to-day career, half the shit he's pulled in Milwaukee and done, I don't know if you saw the recent.
Yeah, he moves Miles sideways.
He's like one of the biggest divas in the NBA. That yeah. frankly, that's one of the like biggest, like, sure you want to add that to this and trade our picks. It's one of the more convincing arguments to me. I think the basketball yeah. arguments,
I think like, it's the most.
Yeah, I think so too. Yeah. And so all of that goes with that. He didn't have to like come and have, you were talking about like his mentality of like setting screens, and I, even to put it more generally, like just a sort of buy-in at the front end of it of like, hell yeah, let's join Luka. We're going to make this work. That I think you'd need that on the front end to really get behind it. But yeah, like I agree on the LeBron front that is a compelling for the most part. I do wonder if being, you know, too many cooks in the kitchen or not one of the main guys, if that's
too many headliners.
Yeah. Too many headliners. That's a better way of putting it, that he would not want that. And then I'm never going to assume like LeBron is worth more than the salaries that we're talking about here. And I understand
he's
that we all,
more, he's been worth more than every salary he's ever made.
Sure. Yes. Yes. But this is a whole different ball of wax, right? Yeah. That we're talking about, that while what you're saying, I agree for the most part, I would not begrudge LeBron for being like, hell no, I'm not going to play for that. I'm worth more than that, right? And if I am going to play for that, it's going to be somewhere of my own choosing. That said, if it is, if he wants to be like comfortable and in a place that he can win, Lakers might have, I don't want to say have him backed into a corner or anything like that, but
yeah,
like they can check a lot of boxes for LeBron without kind of giving into whatever he wants. But yeah. I could see LeBron be like, fuck that. I gave you guys this much and this is how you're going to treat me. Like, I'm not going to sign here on general principle. I would totally understand that if he felt that way.
Oh, totally. I mean, like, you know, how long were they running out the string while he was literally like, he had father time and like the head, you know, like, and on that principle, if I were LeBron, I'd be like, no, man, I'm going to Golden State and you have to deal with my ass next year, you know? But I don't know. Same time, honestly, this is why I've always kind of thought it was either the retire or the Lakers. Mm-hmm. Cause like, all right, the Cavs are in there, you know, they're in the Eastern Conference Finals. The amount of work that they would have to do just to be able to open up the mid-level for LeBron, are they interested in doing that? Do they want to sign and trade Jared Allen for LeBron to be able to pay LeBron at the number that you know, he is like the closest to the number that he's probably worth next season? Maybe. Does Dan Gilbert want to just once and for all admit that the only reason that he ever had any kind of a competitive organization was because of that dude? Like, maybe. Mm-hmm. Does LeBron want to give Dan Gilbert a year's worth of, you know, farewell tour revenue? I don't know. Like, and then, you know, you talk about like headliners, the headliner of all headliners you could play with would be Steph Curry up there in Golden State. Like, we saw what that did to Kevin Durant, you know, and like Steve Kerr is now kind of on like his extended farewell tour with the contract that he signed. Does LeBron want to participate in that? So I've always thought that it's like, it's either he retires or he goes, returns to the Lakers next year. I don't see with like the brand awareness that he has that he would ever play for the JV team in the Clippers. I just don't see that.
Yeah. I'd be shocked if he played there. Yeah.
Especially on the other side of the aspiration stuff. Like, I'm not going to help you resuscitate your image on $14 million a year. But like same time, he's a very prideful dude. He's always known what he's worth. He's always, like I said, played, even his max contracts were, he was taking a pay cut to operate on a max contract in his prime. Could he just say, yeah, I have something left to give the game, but I don't want to give what I have to the game at a fraction of what I'm actually worth? Could he walk away for that reason? Honestly, I think I would respect the shit out of that. Just be like, no, I'm worth more.
Do you think there's a chance he retires?
I think so. Like if he sits down with Rich Paul and, you know, all of his Clutch people, and like Clutch employs a cap guru, right? And like LeBron and Clutch, they're gonna get together, and I'm sure they've run through the hypotheticals of what these teams are gonna be able to offer LeBron. And if LeBron has that conversation and says, wait, I'm gonna be on the mid-level anywhere I go, basically, unless I go to like fucking Brooklyn, you know, I could see him saying, I'm good, man. Mm. And I would also say that would suck for me as a basketball fan, for like NBA fans in general. Like, it would suck that he had been kind of backed into that corner, but like, he's a prideful enough guy that I could see him saying like, you know what? The last everybody saw of me was me single-handedly, you know, beating the fucking Houston Rockets. Mm-hmm. Is that like the farewell tour I'm kind of looking for? Hell, the last game that he played in, the Lakers pushed the Thunder to like the brink, you know, and it was with him as the engine of it. Like, that wouldn't be the worst quote-unquote farewell tour or whatever. I could see that. What do you think?
I'd be a little surprised, just because I don't think that.
I would too. I would be too,
his plan. Yeah, not, I know you're not saying it's like likely or anything, but yeah, he's had cameras following him around for the last couple of years for documentary that he's shooting. I think he's trying to do his own kind of last dance type of thing, or at least the. Darius was telling me earlier, he's, you know, that the whispers have always been that LeBron doesn't want to full-fledged farewell tour. By the way, that's one thing to consider too in terms of trying to win a championship next year. If LeBron does have a farewell tour, like, that's a weird thing to be going on at the same time, you know?
Yeah.
Like, really a team locking in to try to win a title, but also we do a ceremony in every visiting arena. But yeah, like Jerry's saying, at
the same time, like, would the Lakers ever not be used to having cameras around? I don't know. Like,
no,
teams, it would be the Lakers that I think could handle that situation.
I agree. It's just, it's a lot. There's a lot going on for the team on a night to night basis. If the focus is to win a championship. So yeah, I'd be a little surprised. But I'm also with you in that I don't see where he plays otherwise. But I don't think he's going to make a decision about next year based on money, meaning that, like, I think it's meaningful for him to go out on his terms. Mm-hmm. And I don't think that these were his terms. Like, maybe you can look at it after the fact and be like, well, I wasn't planning on retiring, but, you know, won a playoff series against an old rival in KD, although he only played one game, right? But without the other two guys, I never had to be that role player Vince Carter. In fact, the last you saw of me was a number one option on a team that got to the second round, fought valiantly against the champs type of thing.
It's like, kind of like an artistic last dance, but yeah.
It's nice, but I don't think that's what LeBron
had. I don't think that's what he wants. Yeah. And actually, to your point about, like, the farewell tour as a potential distraction thing, Sabrina has been tracking this, like, unofficially, and it's something that she always kind of, like, chuckles about in our Slack. The Lakers record in games where LeBron breaks a record.
Milestone, we're terrible.
It's awful.
Terrible.
So, like, could it be a full season of milestones, like, essentially?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I don't know if I want to sign up for covering that. But, yeah, I don't know. I the LeBron thing, you know, I think you're absolutely right in the pods and then in texting that we've had back and forth to say that, like, he is at a place where, and the league is at a place where he doesn't have the leverage that he has historically had. And what he wants isn't everybody's top priority. I always go back to last season. Remember he opted in, and then Rich Paul gives that statement to ESPN. Then he goes golfing and wears, like, the home, you know, hat that when he went golfing in Cleveland, and he does the pictures there with in the Cleveland in the Cavs, like, facility there with the rookies that they had. And there was all of this, like, speculation, are the Lakers going to trade him, are they going to do that? And while there was that speculation, you know, you talk to people around the league, and the response from all of the teams that would have interest was, yeah, we're interested in him. Of course we're interested in LeBron, but on a buyout as a minimum, like, as you know, and LeBron, at no point in his basketball life has there ever been that, but that has never existed, you know? Yeah. And it's even louder now, right? Like, you know, the Lakers are saying, of course we want LeBron back, right? Rob Blinken saying,
I'm not sure LeBron's ever actually had an actual contract negotiation from a money standpoint, because the rookie salary was already dictated when he was drafted in 2003, and so is the max contract. So it was like, there's never been another time in now the 24th season where it's like, what are we going to pay LeBron? There've been a couple of times like, gosh, can you take less or anything? But just from a, like, do you want LeBron? Yes. What are you willing to pay him? Whatever we got. That's always been the answer until now.
Well, even the one time that he took, quote unquote, less was so that he and Wade and Bosch could make the amount of money that they made. Yeah. And that was still him dictating the terms of that contract. Right. That was all three of those guys dictating the terms of that contract. This time he's not dictating the terms of his contract, you know? Right. And like, again, like, this is where I wish his relationship with the Lakers and Clutch's relationship with the Lakers was a little healthier so that these conversations could go a little smoother. Because again, like, all right, the Lakers with him back at, we'll say the 25 to 27 million number that I've been throwing out for the last couple of months. Let's say that's running it back. Mm-hmm. LeBron has made it very clear that he doesn't want to be on the run it back Lakers.
You know? We didn't have enough talent. He said that on that episode too. We weren't outworked. We weren't this or that. We did not have enough talent to win.
Right. And that wasn't, and he didn't mean we didn't have enough talent to win because Luka was hurt.
No.
He meant we didn't have enough talent, period.
Yes.
And I think, you know, if you're Rob and the Lakers have their own cap guy too. If you're if you sit him down and you sit Rich Paul down in that meeting and you say, look, theoretically, we could pay you $25 million next year. But that means you're on the exact same roster, basically, that you were on this year. And we didn't have a chance at winning a championship this year. Being brutally honest with ourselves, we did not. Mm-hmm. So if you say, all right, but if we have you back at this number, this allows us to get involved in these Giannis conversations. This allows us to get involved in Walker Kessler conversations, Jalen Duren conversations, Peyton Watson conversations, you know, and like, I thought it was notable that LeBron was basically like, yeah, I'm going on vacation this weekend. When we come back, you know, closer to the end of June, as we get closer to the draft, we'll, you know, start to have a conversation about where I'll be at and then make a decision. You know, I think somebody said he said around August, but I took it to mean that his decision is going to be made by draft day.
Yeah, he said between late June and August. So he gave
the whole last month.
That's all, and there's a lot of shit that happens in that month too.
Yeah, and by the way, like the Lakers technically make this decision first. They have to, Pete, renounce his rights.
Right. Yeah,
if they want to have this conversation about Giannis, if they want to, like the best sales pitch that they can make to Milwaukee is predicated on renouncing their free agent rights on LeBron, on Rui, and on everybody else that they can make that decision for. And you know, that's one, like, I'm be a fun day on the internet the day that that happens. I'm sure that there's going to be a lot of stuff flying. I you know, my only hope, and I say this, I think I probably sound a little naive when I talk about LeBron, because like, I do truly think the Lakers and he need each other. And maybe that's kind of a naive outlook on the world, this idea that we need each other, because I do think that we do need each other, right? Like, in order to be involved with really cool projects and situations, that is predicated on somebody needing another person and working together to a greater good. And I think here with the Lakers, I think LeBron does care about how Lakers fans will feel about him when it's all said and done. I think the Lakers care that they respect the end of LeBron's tenure here. Yeah, I do think that there's some bullshit that's gone on behind the scenes between LeBron and Rob and Jeannie and Clutch and all that stuff. There is some of that stuff going on there. But at the end of the day, like, I think Darius put it really well on your podcast, your guys' LeBron podcast, which I thought was really good. Go through any number of hypotheticals where you're building out the Lakers roster next year. Do that without LeBron James and try to make the Lakers better. And I don't think you can. I don't think that's a possibility.
Yeah.
And now with that reality, and now you bring Giannis into this conversation, yes, that is a lot of headliners. And on any given night, the focus could be LeBron's retirement tour and Giannis's you know, trying to get back into that superstar conversation that I think he's kind of fallen out of, right? Like, whenever we talk about best players in the league, it's kind of a Jokic, Shea, Luka conversation. And Giannis is kind of around there fourth. I think he belongs in that conversation. He's going to be working to get back into that conversation next year. And then you also have, like, you know, the Lakers actually vying for a championship. So it would be really tricky. It'd be really interesting. I'd have a lot of fun covering it. But that to me is like, where I think this should probably be heading.
Yeah, no, I think that's likely the case.
All right. I have this episode flew by. My bad. I'm 5 minutes over with you. Anything that you want to plug before we get you out here?
No, just had the great season on Offside and LFR Pod when you get a chance. But yeah, man, looking forward to this summer. Get out. Look, we have a lot to talk about.
Absolutely. Pete, always downplays it, but LFR is the only like appointment viewing listening that I have, and you guys really need to check it out.
I appreciate that, man. We got some questions.
No, I think we're. Yep. I didn't see any supers over the course of the show. So, like, you know, somebody at the very top, Pete has been Team Giannis all year anyway, so. I think people are kind of surprised. We didn't really hit on as much like why Lakers fans are a little nervous about this.
Let's talk about that. I got a few minutes if you got time, but yeah.
What do you think it is? Where do you think that comes from?
I think it's a few things. I think it's feeling burned by the Russ trade. It's also like when you consolidate all your eggs in one basket, you are one injury away. What if we have another year like we had this year where one of them are always hurt? It's a great three-star team on paper, but if you're a two-star team in actuality all year because one of them is always hurt, like you're just a below-average two-star team in some ways because you don't have all the depth that most of those teams normally have as well. So I think that's a part of it. I do think that the Milwaukee and how it went with Dame and Giannis is a part of it. I think the pick-and-roll thing is something I actually feel fairly passionate about because I do think that a lot of people kind of view it through that lens and like Giannis isn't going to be that. He doesn't want to be that. I just don't think that's as important. I also think that people are extremely risk-averse, and this is something that's true in sports and otherwise, is that there is a certain amount of safety in the, let's just get a couple of solid guys and save up for our kids' college fund and just live, like, invest in low-yield IRAs that, you know what I'm saying? Like, it's this mentality of, like, saving up for retirement and stable, like, be good. But that's one of the things I'm actually worried about is I heard a phrase recently from a Lakers person of sustainable competitiveness and describing this era. We were talking about the draft reforms and all of that, right? And how like there's a certain amount of, oh yeah, OKC and San Antonio all save up all these fucking picks. And then the NBA kicks the ladder out from everybody else. So they get to get the benefit from while everybody else. Exactly. Right. And they referred to it as that era of like, being sustainably competitive. I don't want to be sustainably competitive where we're winning 55 games every year and losing in the second round. I want a championship. And if that means that we got to take some risks, it almost certainly means we have to take some risks is considering that we don't have those draft picks. We don't have that young capital. You have to be able to find that depth. I'm not saying that you can just have those three guys and roll the ball out there and have trash depth, right? But I think it's a mix of all of that. And I think a lot of it's valid, right? I don't think that, this get you
honest. There's no imbalanced opinion on this.
I don't think being against this is, but I do feel pretty strongly in that idea that Lakers need a really high end front court player that when Giannis is staring you in the face, it's hard to not be like, what about that guy? You know what I mean? Especially when he can bring a level of defensive, not on every play, but you go watch the Lakers Milwaukee game. I think it was the first game this year that we lost in the clutch. We were like 23-0 or something like that. And then Giannis locked up Luka on one play, locked up LeBron on another play down the stretch, and it was game over. And so having a front court player that can do that, but also has a defensive ceiling, he just checks so many boxes of what I think we need. He's a talk about a shot in the arm in terms of athleticism and just like force. That we really lack otherwise when you watch us compared to these other top teams that I understand the arguments against it. I think there's like a dozen different ways to fuck it up if you do it, but I think it's got the highest ceiling.
I look at this kind of like sitting down at a blackjack table, you know? And so essentially when you walk into a casino, I went over this with Harrison, but when you walk into a casino, there's basically like three outcomes, right? You can go in there and you can hit it big and you can have the time of your life and your room gets comped and it's incredible. And you go back there thinking that you're going to do that next time too. Then on the other end of the spectrum, there's a world where you go in there, you put it all on black and there it goes and your time is done. And then what happens, so the vast majority of people though, when they walk into a casino is that you walk in and from the moment that you walk in there, you bleed money. And it's just a matter of getting out of there before you bleed out. And I like the way that I kind of look at blackjack is I try to get as much money on the table as I possibly can. And in advantageous situations as quickly as possible. And I sit down at a blackjack table and I want to get up quickly because the longer that I'm at that table, statistically speaking, the more money I'm going to lose.
And that's going to catch up to you. Yeah.
Right. And so like, I think right now the Lakers, if we continue with this blackjack analogy, I think the Lakers find themselves with 11 going up against like an 8. Right. And you're not probably supposed to double down against an 8 that's showing when the dealers show an 8. You're probably supposed to just hit and just play this thing out and see how it's going. But I'm of the opinion here where it's like, yeah, you could hit. And you could, you know, you could hit and you can get a seven and you can draw to the dealer's 18 and you live to fight another day. Mm-hmm. But like nobody tells stories about the time that they hit and drew seven and they tied the dealer. They drew the dealer. That's not, to me, it's like you have Luka Doncic. You are well on your way to in a really good team next year, probably. So to me, I'm like, all right, yeah, the dealer's showing eight. OKC, San Antonio, they're really effing good. Fuck it. Let's double. Let's do this. You know, or even better, like, you know, so in some casinos, they force you to split aces. Like you just have to. That is like the rule. But like sometimes, all right, you have, let's say you're dealt two aces, right? And the dealer has eight. Again, the probably smarter play is just to hit, and you're probably sitting at a solid number almost no matter what you draw. Screw it. I want to split them. I want to double. I want to put as much money on the table here as I can. And then just like, you know, however it plays out, that's how it's going to play out. And to me, like, yeah, the Lakers could just draft some guys and focus on their depth, and they're going to get smarter organizationally. So they're probably going to get more bang for their buck from draft picks over the years and stuff like that. That is a perfectly solid way to go about it. But I don't think anybody's going to like brag to their kids or their grandkids down the road about the time that they watched the Lakers pick somebody at 17 and see who that player turned out to be. No, I'm going to tell my kids about the time that I watched Giannis and Luka and LeBron and Austin try to go take on Victor Wembanyama in like the greatest blackjack game that the NBA could possibly provide us. That's the, you know, that's kind of my worldview outlook anyway. And this kind of lends itself specifically for it. It's also why I've busted out of a lot of casinos.
Sure. I was going to say, nobody tells the story of you being broke as shit on the street, thrown out of the casino.
Look, I at least got a free drink.
Yeah.
I think that is the perfect way to end this thing. I also think that Giannis has some Dwight Howard to him. And I think Lakers fans are specifically bitten by Dwight Howard in a way that like that entire ordeal sucked and trading for Russell Westbrook sucked. And I think Lakers fans are kind of like, yeah, I don't really want to go through that again. I understand it.
Every time I hear Giannis talk or just kind of how he moves in a lot of ways, maybe not a great idea. Like, yeah.
Yeah. I remember like the first things that we heard after the Lakers traded for Dwight was like, yeah, he's like, okay. He's like, I guess kind of happy about being a Laker. He really didn't want to be. And I was like, why did we do that? What? Because back then I was kind of more of just a fan. So I did refer to the Lakers as we, and I remember like they traded for him and I was all kinds of hyped. I was like, wow, they traded for him and they didn't even have to give up power. Holy shit. Their team next year is going to be like all of this. And I was like, gosh, this is incredible. I was walking around the room that I was in. Mm-hmm. And then like the more that I heard about the trade, the less thrilled about. Wait, so his back isn't quite right. Yeah. We don't think his back is going to be okay for a little while. Huh?
Wasn't that a year?
That sucked. Hopefully this wouldn't turn out that way.
No.
All right. Thank you, Pete, for hopping on. Thank you, everybody, for tuning in. Please hit that like button. Please hit that subscribe button. That's going to do it for this episode and this week's episodes here in the lounge. Have a great rest of your weekend. It's a long one. Please be safe out there, no matter what it is that you guys are doing to celebrate this long weekend. I will be back probably Monday. Going to enjoy the weekend myself. Enjoy the basketball, and we'll talk to you then.
Bye, everyone.